professional people did a good.
Will the Senate please come to order? Will the members please vote to signify their presence?
Roll shows 15 members present this morning, Mr. President.
Please stand for the invocation by Jesse Keel of the Juneau Jewish Community.
With deep and abiding respect for the religious beliefs of all, we pray. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, pokeach ivrim. Blessed art thou, eternal God, who guides the universe and who opens the eyes of the blind. God bless this state, that it may know justice and prosperity, and bless those who serve it, that they may do your will with an open heart. We acknowledge today our differences, as we pray that you will bring us closer together. O God, who sees us as we truly are, grant that we may find the strength of spirit to do what is right, and make us ever mindful of our loved ones and those who depend on us. For all Alaska, we ask these blessings. Yivarechacha Adonai v'yishmarecha, may God bless you and keep you. Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha, may God show you favor and be gracious to you. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom, may God show you kindness, look on you with love, and give you peace. Amen.
Senator Lincoln, would you lead us in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the
republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal. That brings us to the certification of the journal.
I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 88th legislative day.
Senator Lehman.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the journal is approved as certified by the Senate Secretary. That brings us to introduction of guests. Another guest for introduction, Senator Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. It's my privilege today to have in the gallery directly behind me members of the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association. They've been here before. They usually come up annually in the spring. And let me first introduce them to you. James Matucci, if you'd stand, Christina Hermach, Dan Heinze, David Shestak, and Jake Matter. Jake's a fine putter, too. He's good participation. If you'll help me welcome them, please.
Further guests, Senator Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, in the Ziegler Gallery behind me, I have a constituent from Kodiak down visiting and wandering the halls talking to a few of you about some of the issues he's really concerned with. Please help me welcome Mike Milliken.
Senator Ellis.
Thanks, Mr. President. In the Ziegler's gallery behind me, I have a constituent who is probably fairly well known to many of you. He's been deeply involved in public policy issues, especially in the resource arena, Mr. Paul Rusnowski. And with him today, I'm poaching from somebody who isn't here for the senator from the hillside, is Mr. Frank Avizak, who's with Alaska Interstate Gas. And if the body could help me welcome both of them.
Senator Phillips?
Mr. President, you and I both have a constituent from our own community from the Ziegler Gallery. Tom Morgan is with the White YMCA. Please help him have a welcome.
Further guests for introduction? If there's no further guests for introduction, that brings us to messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message dated April 5th, stating the House has passed and returned CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 14, State Affairs, reconsidering the imposition of a fee to transport firearms through Canada. This resolution has been referred for enrollment. Message dated April 5th, stating the House has passed and transmitted for consideration House Joint Resolution Number 20 by Representatives Jewell, Hudson, Curtulo, Scalzi, Kapsner, Croft, opposing Arctic marine shipment of nuclear waste between Russia and Japan.
Transportation.
House Bill Number 162 by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to absences from the state under the Longevity Bonus Program.
Health and Social Services, State Affairs, and Finance.
Message dated April 5th, stating the House has passed Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 with amendments, and so the following is transmitted for consideration. House CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 10, MLV, amended House, urging the United States Congress to fully fund the operational readiness and recapitalization requirements of the United States Coast Guard.
Senator Lehman.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate concur in the House amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 10, thus adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 10, MLV, amended House. And I understand that the sponsor of the resolution recommends a yes vote.
Is there debate? If there's no debate, the question is concurrence with the House amendments, thus adopting House Committee substitute, Senate Joint Resolution 10, MLV, amended House. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the Senate has concurred in the House amendment, thus adopting House Committee substitute Senate Joint Resolution 10, MLV, amended House by a vote of 17 yeas to 0 nays.
Those are all the messages from the House this morning, Mr. President.
Communications.
There are no communications this morning, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Lehman.
I didn't do this earlier, but I move and ask unanimous consent that Senator Cowdery be excused from the call of the Senate today because of the illness of his wife.
Without objection, Senator Cowdery will be excused due to the illness of his wife. For communications? Report. Have we done communications?
Yes, there are no communications
okay.
This morning.
Where reports of standing committees.
Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 158, reports on state participation in natural gas pipeline, recommends the Resources Committee substitute be adopted, fiscal note attached, signing due pass, Senators Donnelly and Kelly co-chairs, Senators Osterman, Olson, Lehman, and Wilkin, signing no recommendation, Senators Green, Hoffman, and Ward. Senate Bill number 158 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 172, Court System Annual Report, recommends the Finance Committee substitute be adopted, zero fiscal note attached. Signing due pass, Senators Donnelly and Kelly co-chairs, Senators Green, Osterman, Lehman, and Ward. Signing no recommendation, Senators Hoffman, Olson, and Wilkin. Senate Bill number 172 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered House Bill number 118, Senior Citizens Veteran Property Tax Exemption. Previous zero fiscal note attached. Signing due pass, Senator Kelly co-chair, Senators Osterman and Olson. Signing no recommendation, Senator Donnelly co-chair, Senators Hoffman, Wilkin, Ward, Lehman, and Green. House Bill number 118 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill number 103, Finance Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority Failed Operating Budget, recommends a Finance Senate Committee substitute be adopted, signing due pass, Senators Donnelly and Kelly co-chairs, Senators Green, Lehman, and Ward, signing do not pass, Senator Hoffman, signing no recommendation, Senators Osterman, Olson, and Wilkin. CS for House Bill number 103, Finance, has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill number 104, Finance, Mental Health Budget, recommends a Finance Senate Committee substitute be adopted, signing due pass, Senators Donnelly and Kelly co-chairs, Senators Green, Osterman, Wilkin, Ward, and Lehman, signing do not pass, Senator Hoffman, signing no recommendation, Senator Olson. CS for House Bill number 104, Finance, has no further referral.
Rules.
Those are all the standing committee reports at this time, Mr. President.
Can we stand at ease, please? Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Pierce?
I can't speak. Upon a motion for a recess, there will be a Rules Committee meeting in order to hear the two operating budget bills. I think that's House Bill 103 and House Bill 104.
Okay, we will recess for just hopefully about 10 minutes. Senator Lehman?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in recess to a call of the chair, expected to be about 10 minutes for purposes of a Rules Committee meeting.
We're back to order. We are under reports of standing committees. Madam Secretary.
Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill number 103, Finance, Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority Failed Operating Budget. Signing for placement on the calendar, Senator Terrio. Signing under other recommendations. Signing no recommendation, Senator Pierce, Chair, Senator Phillips. Signing amend, Senator Ellis. Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill number 104, Finance, Mental Health Budget. Signing for placement on the calendar, Senator Pierce, Chair, Senators Terrio and Phillips. Signing under other recommendations, amend, Senator Ellis. These bills appear on today's calendar. Those are all the standing committee reports this afternoon, Mr. President.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
Senate concurrent resolution number 9 by the Senate Rules Committee by request approving the open meetings guidelines proposed by the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
State Affairs, Judiciary, and Finance.
Those are all the resolutions for introduction this morning.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill number 177 by Senator Ward, an act relating to driving while intoxicated and to presumptions arising from the amount of alcohol in a person's breath or blood, and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary and Finance.
Senate Bill number 178 by Senator Terrio, an act relating to the detention of delinquent minors and to temporary detention hearings, amending Rule 12, Alaska Delinquency Rules, and providing for an effective date.
Hess, Judiciary.
Senate Bill number 179 by the Senate Finance Committee, an act relating to the contracting and financing authority of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, authorizing the authority to issue bonds in a principal amount not to exceed $76 million to finance the acquisition, design, construction, inventory, and operation of natural gas, propane, air, or manufactured gas public utility facilities, and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
Those are all the bills for introduction this afternoon, Mr. President.
That brings us to the consideration of the daily count.
CS for House Bill number 103, Finance, Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority failed. An act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends a Finance Senate Committee substitute. Signing do pass, Senators Donnelly and Kelly, co-chairs, Senators Green, Lehman, and Ward. Signing do not pass, Senator Hoffman. Signing no recommendation, Senators Osterman, Olson, and Wilkin. Rules Committee considered the bill, recommends calendaring. Signing no recommendation, Senator Pierce, Chair, Senator Phillips. Signing for placement on the calendar, Senator Terrio. Signing amend, Senator Ellis. There's a Finance Senate Committee substitute.
Senator Donnelly.
President, I move the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 103.
There is objection. Is there debate? The question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 103. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 103 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Senate CS for House Bill number 103, Finance, an act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds, making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund and providing for an effective date. There's Amendment number 1 by Senators Davis, Elton, Hoffman, Lincoln, and Olson. Starts Sec. Blank, Department of Education and Early Development, and it has been distributed.
Senator Davis.
Mr. President, I move Amendment number 1.
Amendment number 1 has been moved. There is objection. Senator Davis. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a few brief remarks in introduction to our budget package. Our amendments today to your budget represent the Democratic agenda for moving Alaska forward. Our four amendments have been bundled together and make needed investments in, first, public education. As Democrats, that's our top issue. Number 2, public safety, public health, and economic development. And Mr. President, I want to highlight that we've included the University of Alaska and the necessary funding there as part of our public education package, from Head Start to the university, to give Alaskans the opportunity they deserve. Specifically, we're talking about an investment of about $35.5 million of general funds, completely funded by a small increase in the alcohol tax, an increase that is very popular, as we know, with the Alaska public. Specifically, it's about 6.6 cents per drink. Again, it's our package. The First Amendment is public education, which we see as the ladder of economic opportunity, public safety, protect law-abiding citizens from the criminal element. Third, public health, specifically mentioned in the Alaska Constitution. Nothing could be more fundamental than us joining together to protect the public health. And finally, economic development, because family wage jobs, a good, decent job, is the best social program we know of and something that we ought to work together to achieve. We believe that the budget proposal currently before us and up for amendment underfunds these critical areas of public education, public safety, public health, and economic development. This is our opportunity today to share information and join together and debate these things and help correct some of the oversights and mistakes that happened in this budget to date. We would ask you to keep an open mind and please pay attention to the facts and figures and help us make some of these corrections that the Alaskan public deserves. These are our priorities and we commend them to you.
Senator Davis, would you move Amendment number 1?
Yes, Mr. President, I'd like to move Amendment number 1.
And there is objection. Go ahead.
I will speak to Amendment number 1 that deals with public education.
Many of you on this floor know that I have been involved with education for many years. And this is something that I have advocated for a period of 9 years on the school board at one time, and then an additional 2.5 years, and served some time in another body working towards education. So it is a pleasure for me to stand here to say that I do support the amendment that I have introduced, not simply because we feel that is the right thing to do, but it will show accountability on the part of the legislature. For years, we have talked about accountability for education, and say that to the administrators and teachers and public schools officials and school board members. And I say it's time for us also as legislators to be accountable. I do believe that we would be accountable if we would put the additional funds that we need to put in here for the Head Start program. I don't have to go into a lot of details to tell you about the Head Start program, because I'm sure all of you in this room know that that program has been in existence for 30 years, nearly 30 years. And it has provided great opportunities for families of poor families to put their children in early childhood programs so that they might also have places where they may learn to read and to interact with other students. When children do not get the opportunity to have an opportunity to go to schools like Head Start, many times they enter into the school system way behind. And that is a lag that they do not ever catch up with. In general, children that go to Head Start programs or similar programs is able to increase their vocabulary greatly, so that when they go to school that they will be able to probably to read independently by the time that they're third grade. And in many cases, children are now learning to read at the kindergarten level who have gone to Head Start, coming into the programs with improved vocabulary. It is also a fact that students that do not get early childhood development programs have a vocabulary of 4,000 words versus a child that has had that kind of training, a vocabulary of 20,000 words. We have put a lot of responsibility on the Education Department, and the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development have put these programs forth because they know that they are needed. And I do support them, and I would like for you to support the Head Start program, giving them the fund that they would need so that we will be able to include an additional 300 children in other communities so that they also may be able to have an opportunity to have a Head Start. The Alaska Central School Online Program is a new program that would be quite beneficial, if particularly to small school districts, so that they would have a central location where they may be getting online training from specialized teachers to help them teach the kids the information that they need in order to pass the benchmarks as well as the qualifying exam for graduation. Without these programs, we know at the present time that many, many of the small schools throughout the state of Alaska, children will not be able to pass that exam. And even though we have legislation over the other body that's going to delay that test for an additional 2 years, we know that we need to provide the resources, and that is the funds that we need to make sure that they can align their curriculum and get the teachers trained to give the information that they would need so that they will be able to pass the test in the year 2004, if that's what we do agree upon. The other issues that I have listed on here that we have to talk about is the quality schools, quality school grants for low-performing schools. And we do know that we have low-performing schools throughout the state that can utilize this money. And an additional $2 million is not a whole lot of money to put in such a program that would be so valuable. It would help our school district align their curriculums so that they will be also teaching the standards, so when they do take the benchmarks and the qualifying exam, that they will be able to pass those exams. We are asking a lot of our school districts, and so we need to give them every resource that we can. If we want to make sure that our teachers are well-trained, and it takes a well-trained teacher, some of the monies that we will be putting into some of these grants will provide professional training to our teachers. It would help them to learn how to retrain them on how to teach children reading, because we know that reading is so important, and that we want all our children to be able to read independently by third grade, because when they reach the fourth grade, the vocabulary should be so great and they should have an understanding of reading that they will be able to use that throughout the rest of their lives as they complete school. So we know that early education is important. Profiles that will be developed in early elementary schools at the elementary level, starting with kindergarten, to see where our children are so we know what resources we need to give to them in order to get them ready for school. We also have in that bundle of information quality school centers to be set up. To be set up so that small schools would be able to tune into those online, into the online center and get the information that they need to get. We know that in small schools throughout the rural areas, and my colleague sitting next to me always referred to the three communities, the urban community, the rural community, and the bush community. This would very much benefit the bush schools because they would be able to have online services, because many times teachers go to those rural areas and they don't stay very long because they're not expected. When they get there, they don't know what they were going to face when they get there, and they might say that they want to stay a year, and they might even leave within the year. There are many times where we don't even have a teacher that is there in the school, and that many times the aides have to teach children until someone can come in and replace that teacher who was qualified to teach, and our children get behind. And this online center would help them in that regard. We also know that the university is important to us, and so therefore we have included this in this package because as our students graduate from high school, they do need to go off to college, and many of our students are going away from this state to other states and finishing school, and many of them do not return to this state. And so we have a drain in the age group of 20 to 35 years of age because they go away and they don't come back. This would allow the schools, the universities, if we would give them this additional money that they need to beef up programs that they need to put into the schools in order to offer more classes and more programs for the university. I know that we have funded it at a higher level than we have in a long time over the last couple of years, but I would like to see that program fully funded for the amount that was asked for. The Kosobu Tech Center we know is important because vocational education is something that all of our students need, but this particular center has a proven track record. Over the years, it has provided quality students that have gone out to get very good jobs. It is a model that we could all benefit from, all districts throughout the communities of this state. And it would be an injustice not to fund this at the level that is requested. The $609,000 that we are asking for this program is just a small amount. It will show accountability on our part. And I would urge you, for no reason but to say that you support education, because as we say, we talk about education, we all say that we support it. And I do believe that everybody in this body support education. The devil's in the detail of it then, because when we get to talking about the funding and those resources that they need, that's where we all come up with the different figures that we have. But I say to you, the members of this body, let's show that we can be accountable, just as we are asking other people to be accountable, that we will fully fund the units that's in this bundle for education from K to 12 and also at the university level. We know that we must start our students off very early as we can, and we do know that we have to provide education for them at the university level because we have to learn from the early ages all the way till we die. Things are constantly changing, and so therefore we must prepare our students. Many times our students might not want to go off to college, but they may go out and get a job, or they might decide 2 or 3 years later that they might be ready. Here in this state, we have an open university that will take anyone in. You don't have to have an A average to come into the school. You may just enroll. And so they need these resources to keep up with all the remedial things that they have to provide and train. They have a 5-year teaching program that will make us have better teachers to come out. And I know that those programs are important, and we should make sure that we do everything that we can to support them. And there's no better way to support them but to give them the dollars that have been requested. And as I don't want to belong this, but I want to go back to just give you a couple examples of people going off to Head Start who have had children and didn't know about the Head Start program. And Head Start was introduced to these young single parents, and they have enrolled their children into these programs and found out how valuable that they were. And they would in turn go out and volunteer and help other parents to learn about the program so that they may come in. Now, and the program not only is there for that, But the program is all there, also there to help children that might have some disabilities that can be worked on at an early age, because they will need some help before they can go into the first grade. And the earlier we get these children into the program, the better off that they will be. One example that I want to talk about is a mother who had a child who was in the Head Start program, but had another child who had a great disability, and she thought that it would not be responsible on her part to put that child into Head Start because they would not be able to give the time that would be needed to the child. But they talked to her into enrolling this child into the program, and because the child was enrolled in the program, the child advanced very fast and found out that had he not been in the program, he probably would have gone off to school and been set into a class for special ed. The monies that we can put into these programs will cut down on special ed, because many of the children that are in special ed programs are there because they have more behavior problems than there are anything else, because they are frustrated because they have not got what they needed at the early stages of life. And that is why it's so important for us to look at some of the fundamental things that our students, that our children need, and make sure we as legislators be accountable, just as we're asking other people to be accountable also.
Senator Taylor?
A brief question to the sponsor. I noted on the back page, or the second page of the amendment, that the increase to the university of about $4.5 million was to be funded out of an increase in the alcohol beverage tax. Could you tell us where the funds are coming from for the rest of the amendment?
The whole package would be
funded out of general fund, out of the alcohol tax.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. The former speaker makes a great case here. I just wanted to highlight the importance of this opportunity for you to support more adequate funding for the University of Alaska. The Regents, as we know, made a very reasonable request of about 16.4. I know there have been some adjustments in that figure, but this budget figure the Democrats are proposing of 4.49 anticipates, well, we, as a minority, we gave our votes to a bill with a fiscal note that had about $3 million for the university in a previous action by this body. So this is the dollar figure anticipating that figure proposed by Senate Finance, that piece of legislation with fiscal note. This $4.4 million gets us to what's a very reasonable request from the Board of Regents. So it's not, in my estimation, full funding for the university. It's not even adequate funding, but it is this figure, if you vote yes on this amendment and it passes, would give the Regents what they were asking for this year to continue their positive progress and meeting the demands that we've made on them as an institution.
Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this budget proposes an additional $5.8 million over last year's level in pupil transportation. And those dollars really free up dollars that can go into our classrooms. It contains a repeat of 6.1 in learning opportunity grants that were one-time funds that were included in the education budget last year, and includes those funds again this year. It increases by increases another 6.1 to $6.2 million for an additional form of learning opportunity grants for textbooks, instructional materials, vocational education programs, and nursing services for our schools. There's $11.3 million in new general funds for the University of Alaska. We've replaced $1.4 million in one-time funds in last year's budget with general funds for Head Start. And we added another $100,000 in other funds to Head Start. And we also placed authorization for $3.7 million in additional federal monies for Head Start, which brings the total to about $8,613 per Head Start student, and there's about 3,400 of those in the state of Alaska. In short, Mr. President, this budget reflects a major, major commitment to education in our state, shifting up priorities towards education, and the recognition that we will continue to work on that, as there are other vehicles moving through the system that have the potential to increase funding to our schools even more.
Senator Elp.
Thanks, Mr. President. Just a few comments, or maybe some comments. I don't think any of us would disagree that if we took a grocery poll, those people that we pass in the aisles, and said, what's the most important issue we're going to be dealing with this session, I doubt if many of us would disagree with the notion that they'd say education. I appreciate those small increments in this budget that are new. I mean, it's a dramatic departure from the last decade when we've allowed the erosion of inflation to chip away at education funding. But it doesn't begin to get us to where we need to be. Right now, we're demanding much more of schools, demanding much more of students, and we need to give them the resources that they deserve. The resources, in fact, that professional educators and the business community recommend. I'm going to spend a little bit of time with a few of the components of this amendment. And first is Head Start. I don't think that there is probably a government program that is better than the Head Start program. I mean, we know what happens. Head Start children are far more likely to finish high school. They're far more likely to go into college. They're far more likely to marry. They're far more likely to buy a house. They're far more less likely to have children out of wedlock. Every dollar we spend on Head Start saves us $7 in the future. I mean, that's smart spending. That's smart investing. It was also noted that the federal government has made an extra $3.3 million available. I mean, that doesn't come for free. That extra $3.3 million costs $562,000. Now, some might suggest, well, we'll let communities pick it up. I hope that whoever suggests that aren't the same people that are saying, let's not raise taxes. Because if communities pick up the cost, they're going to have to either reduce programs or increase revenues. Without this amendment, my big fear is that over $3 million gets left on the table. Now, if you're a poker player, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to walk away from that pot. Mr. President, we all have students that we can point to as successes because of Head Start. I think one of the most dramatic examples is an example from Wrangell. 13 years ago, there were 20 students in Head Start. Last year, 18 of them graduated. The other two we don't know about because they moved out of town. I mean, this is smart investing, and I would just encourage us to make the investment. Mr. President, I also want to talk a little bit about the senator from Anchorage made this point, and I just want to reemphasize it, the importance of investing in distance education. We're proposing a small increment that allows state distance educators to provide resources to small schools. In the state of Alaska, Mr. President, we have 185 high schools with 50 or fewer students. We know, or we ought to know, that high schools with that number of students don't have a broad range of credentialed teachers. This amendment allows students in those schools to take advantage of credentialed teachers in important subject areas who can deliver by distance the educational resources that these students need. Otherwise, I mean, what we're requiring of these students to pass exit exams. I mean, let's at least give them the professional resources. If we can't give it to them in the classroom, let's at least give them the resources to get it through distance delivery. Child care assistance, which is a component of this amendment. I mean, child care assistance is what helps families move off welfare, and it helps keep them off welfare. The average monthly daycare center bill for two children, one an infant, the other a toddler, in Southeast Alaska is $1,143 a month. In Anchorage Mat-Su, the average bill for a parent with an infant and a toddler is $1,146. That's more than my mortgage. Some will say, well, we'll be okay because we're meeting federal match. You know, but when I hear that, it sounds to me as if we're just saying that doing the absolute minimum that the feds require doesn't mean that we're doing enough for working families. I also want to briefly mention the Kotzebue Tech Center, which is also a component of this amendment. This center provides vocational education to Alaskans in a resource development state. I mean, what can be more important pre-gas pipeline than having trained students coming out of vocational centers who can apply for jobs in the pipeline. I mean, we know, I mean, the stars are aligned for our state, Mr. President. Not only do we have the great possibility of a gas pipeline, we also have a U.S. Senator who's chair of the Appropriations Committee, a U.S. Congressman who's chair of the Transportation Committee. I anticipate there are going to be a lot of jobs in Alaska. I just think that we owe it to Alaskans to train them for those jobs. The last component I want to speak to, Mr. President, is the university. And I'm not going to talk a lot about it, but let's just look at three discrete areas of the service that they provide. The first is healthcare education. We've got a chronic shortage of healthcare providers. The university president, university regents have recognized this, and they established a program to train healthcare workers. Statewide, we need 300 nurses each year, and we're only producing 50 to 75. That program needs to grow. Teacher education. We've got a lot of other pieces of legislation that speak to the need of attracting teachers into Alaska. There are 1,000 to 1,200 teacher openings in Alaska, but only 250 to 300 of them are produced in Alaska. We need to train more Alaskans for teaching jobs in Alaska. The other area in the university budget that's very important is the Alaska Process Industry Council. This two-year program, which was started last fall, trains Alaskan workers in Fairbanks, Kenai, and Anchorage for jobs in the oil and gas industry. There are currently 200 people participating in the program, and there's a long waiting list for classes. And that waiting list shouldn't be tolerated. This is a small, small investment in our future. And it meets one of the top priorities that Alaskans have. And I'd encourage careful consideration of this modest increment to our budget. Thanks, Mr. President.
Senator Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I've been trying to follow some of these things, and you know, there isn't hardly a thing on here I don't support and like. I like every bit of it. I'd love to have these things. But we've been missing a pretty significant point, and it was the question I asked of the sponsor originally, and that is, where does the money come from? And that was the only mention made, really, of where the money comes from to fund this $10.5 million increase to the existing budget. And that money comes from Alaska Statute 4360.010, which I went and checked out. That is the alcohol beverage tax. And I'm having a real hard time understanding why a minority of consumers in the state of Alaska should be paying $10.5 million additional in personal taxes that they have to pay to support each of these good causes. Isn't it all Alaskans that benefit from these causes? Or is this similar to what we saw happen on the tobacco tax, that we increased the tobacco tax only based upon how we were going to use it for remediation efforts for people suffering from various diseases and so on that may be enhanced by that, but instead in that instance, most of the money went into education too. Is that what this is? This is another, we'll tax a sinful minority, those people consuming alcohol, but we will use that not for anything to do with alcohol or the evils of alcohol, which I've heard many of the people, especially sponsoring this amendment, talk about the evils of alcohol. But apparently the evils of alcohol are now to be taxed so that we can use it for each of these programs totaling a $10.5 million increase in taxes on Alaskans for the benefit of each of these programs. Programs that I, by the way, support. I just think you're going to the wrong funding source.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, support these.
I guess I should say to everybody on the amendment.
I would support the amendment doesn't reference the alcohol tax.
I know.
But I would say that if the gentleman that previously spoke from Wrangell supports all of these, I would gladly vote for his amendment to switch this to general funds. But if he feels that this funding source is not adequate. But I would say that this does have approximately a 2.5-cent increase in the alcohol tax, and I think the rest of my colleagues would also support his amendment to use general funds if he feels all the people should pay for it. I would also like to say a little bit about Head Start. Yeah, I've supported Head Start in the 15 years that I've been in the legislature, and as my previous speakers have said, this is a very worthwhile program. It proposes to service approximately 325 more children in approximately 6 to 8 communities. There are many communities in the district that I represent. I represent some 70 communities in the state of Alaska, and many of them are very interested in participating in this program, and hopefully someday all of the children in all of the communities will be able to benefit from the Head Start program. I would venture to say that if we want to assure that children pass the exit exams, we should be investing in the Head Start program for all the kids of the state of Alaska. We should probably take note at this time which communities aren't receiving the Head Start funds and check 12 years from now how many of those communities are not passing or have lower standards in passing the exit exams, and that, I think, will be proof enough to support this type of an amendment. Thank you.
If there's no further debate, the question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 1. Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? So Amendment Number 1 to Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 103 Finance fails to be adopted by a vote of 6 yeas to 13 nays.
Amendment Number 2 by Senators Lincoln, Davis, Ellis, Elton, Hoffman, and Olson starts with Section Department of Public Safety. It has been distributed.
Senator Lincoln.
I move Amendment Number 2 and ask for unanimous consent.
There is objection. Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Mr. President, as the minority leader stated from the beginning, that the Democrats have always put public safety as one of the priorities, and it is no different this year. Mr. President, I have served on the Finance Subcommittee of the Public Safety and Corrections for a number of years now, because that's something that is very near and dear to my heart. And before I start, I'd like to also state that the $8.6 million is added from revenue generated from the alcohol tax of 1.4 cents, which is about 2.5 cents per drink, which would cover the $8.6 million. And again, if anybody would like to make that amendment to put it in GF, I certainly would not object to it. Mr. President, in starting out with the constables, we look at what some of the fundamental responsibilities of our government is, and one is certainly to provide adequate law enforcement to all of its citizens. And let's just look at a minute at what is happening in Alaska in providing adequate services, enforcement services to all of Alaska. Because of the unique geographic considerations of the state, which we all are aware of, the state troopers have never had sufficient numbers to provide the consistent first responder type of public service to remote locations. With the limited law enforcement personnel in rural Alaska, help is desperately needed. Our goal should be to provide a law enforcement presence of some type in every community in our state, if in fact our fundamental responsibility is to provide that. No one program can address this goal, and it has to be met on a multi-level approach, this being one of those. It's a new program, and looking at that multi-level approach, the additional the type and level of law enforcement provided to a community will vary from one community to the next. The type of law enforcement presence for a particular community will depend upon that community and what that community's needs are. Mr. President, the constable program, as I said, which is new, is a classification that is separate and distinct from the Alaska State Trooper classification. They would also be law enforcement professionals that would be certified by the Alaska Police Standards, and as police officers would be armed, which is different than what we've got for the VPSOs. But unlike the state troopers, the constables will not be subject to a transfer. The idea is to keep them in that location, that area, for the term of their position. And, Mr. President, if without these eight new constables, we know that the state troopers will only be able to respond to crimes that has already happened, that there is not any prevention or intervention, but it's responding, and sometimes at a very slow pace because of weather, because of location, because of availability of aircraft or vehicle. And this would free up the state troopers who desperately need to spend more time in the areas that they serve now without having to go out into the rural communities for follow-up. I believe also, Mr. President, that with the constable program, that we will see a decline in the crimes that are happening out in our rural and bush communities. And while I did get statistics for that, I chose not to use that because it breaks my heart to start listing percentages in the crimes that have occurred out in rural bush Alaska. But in conclusion, we must improve our law enforcement throughout Alaska, but especially in rural Alaska, where the basic fundamental responsibility of government to provide that adequate law enforcement services is sorely lacking. And this, I believe, is a step in that right direction. It's a program that is embraced by AST and administration, and I hope certainly of this body. Going on, Mr. President, under the blue shirts, we know that law enforcement is a difficult job anywhere, but you look at what the Alaska State Troopers face and have to encounter on a daily basis compared to what their counterparts in the rest of the United States. It's pretty mind-boggling that when we look at 580 or over 587,000 square miles that they have to cover, and combined with weather, the terrain and all, they have significant challenges to overcome. But the public expectation for services of these state troopers continue to increase. It's not, well, I'm sorry, but the weather is bad, or sorry you can't get to us, or I'm sorry you're responding to another fatality or another break and entry. We want your services now. And we have 237 personnel right now, 237 to cover that huge area. When you look at the state troopers in 1983, with a population of 510,000 people, we had 323 state troopers. And with 620,000 plus, an increase of well over 100,000 people, we've dropped from 323 to 237. That doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense to me. Without the additional troopers, the field operations continue to suffer. It continues to be a reactive mode. And while very little crime reduction efforts can really truly be conducted by the state troopers, if you look at just this last year and comparing the statistics from last year to this year, the burglaries have increased by 13%, misdemeanors 5%, misdemeanor assaults, auto thefts 3%, alcohol code violation 15%, financial crimes 26.5%, thefts 5%, traffic violations 4%, which is an increase of 5% over the DWIs of last year. Accidental deaths, 14%. In addition to that, we have the computer and internet crimes that are expected to increase greatly, and the state troopers are not prepared at all for that, much less trying to get those crime rates down. This amendment of eight new troopers would include statewide drug enforcement, but it's for Sitka, Bethel, King Salmon, McGrath, Galena, Talkeetna, Glen Allen, Soldotna, Homer. Mr. President, I would suggest that we cannot afford to ignore the need for additional blue shirts. And if we go on to the brown shirts, we're requesting 6 new brown shirts to provide critical fish and wildlife enforcement across our great state. Now, we have to look at the economics of this as well. You look at the economic value of the Alaska's wild resources. And if we do nothing, we're going to continue to fail in our efforts to provide the adequate law enforcement to do such. In 1999, the economic benefit to Alaska, 5.6 billion pounds of fish and shellfish were sold at a value of 1.2 billion that was harvested in Alaska waters. 50 billion pounds of seafood have been harvested over the last 10 years. 55% of the nation's seafood productions come from Alaska. You look at the sport fishing annual economy to the state, 500 million, hunting, 200 million, viewing, 700 million. And we continue to deny the brown shirts for enforcement. Doesn't make sense to me. If we do nothing, we will ensure that the Bering Sea cannot be adequately patrolled with 86 funded troopers. You know, we, in a comparison, and I ask for some of these comparisons, but if you have Washington and Oregon, which is just 4,436 miles of tidal shoreline, and I say just because for us, we have 36,000 miles, and they have 279 resource law enforcement personnel, far, far more than our 86 with less of an area. Mr. President, again, without approval of all of our fish and wildlife protection troopers, protecting our resources would certainly be compromised. Fundamental fish and game management will not be achieved in those enforcement areas unable to be patrolled. Resource users will continue to access those areas without adequate patrol or repercussions. Locations that these positions would be in and are direly needed is Dillingham, St. Mary's, Ninilchik, Whittier, Nenana, Anchorage, Yakutat, Wrangell, and Juneau. I don't believe that we can afford to place our valuable resources at risk, and therefore this is part of our bundled package.
Senator Hoffman, are you seeking the floor?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Regarding the VPSO program, there are some 76 communities that do not have VPSOs, but for those that I will not read, the list is long, I'll read only about half of them, that do not have police protection that... I think the majority of us have police protection in our community, and if you are in the need of police protection in your community and somebody is robbing your home or there was a murder or a burglary in your home, what would you do without police protection? These are some of those communities. Gamble, Alakanuk, Savunga, Kipnuk, Tununuk, Crooked Creek, Cold Bay, Stevens Village, Teller, Falls Pass, Arctic Village, Clark's Point, Nulato, Akiak, Chifornuk, Circle, Diomede, Igigik, Evansville, Grayling, Gulkana, Holy Cross, Kotlik, Lime Village, Noatak, Pedro Bay, Pitkas Point, Platinum, Stony River, Tana Cross, Tanana, Tulaksak. That's half the list.
Senator Lincoln.
Thank you. I thank my colleague for giving me a little breather there to get a sip of water. Mr. President, in talking about the VPSOs, we've heard a lot of discussion in the subcommittees and on this floor and in the full committee about AFN's funding, $15 million congressional appropriation that was received, and that why not just use that and no need to fund the VPSOs? Well, I asked the same question, Mr. President, because I thought, well, maybe I erred in my response in how those VPSOs were funded and if we could just move those folks that are out there now around. And I received the letter today saying that there seemed to be some confusion over this $15 million appropriation that Senator Stevens was able to get for the Alaska Federation of Natives for the VPSOs. They stated that the $15 million is mandated, underlined, is mandated to assist the villages who are trying to help themselves by adopting local option laws. That Senator Stevens wanted to give these villages a tool to carry out their laws in such a manner that alcohol and substance abuse in these villages will diminish and hopefully be wiped out. That this is for the villagers who are trying to assist themselves in improving life and living conditions in rural Alaska, and the primary objective when he successfully obtained the appropriation. Because of this mandate, AFN says we have limited flexibility as to how these funds may be used, and that this in no way for the 20 new VPSOs was to be replaced, that the state did not have to step up to the plate to protect for public safety protection in rural and bush Alaska, and that you cannot take the federal dollars and supplant the state dollars with this appropriation. Can't be done. And so, Mr. President, I just wanted to clarify that and urge this body to embrace the need for public safety across all of Alaska and support the 20 new VPSOs. I also got an email from Nanwalek yesterday from a lady who I thought she had such a heartfelt email or letter, but just real quickly, she says, without the VPSOs and constables in our rural areas, the troopers are stretched even thinner and the seriousness of the crimes are elevated for response. Please fight for these programs to protect our citizens in our state to live a life of knowing that the state will support trying to wipe out the alcohol abuse with stronger law enforcement placement in our rural areas and villages. Give our children a safer environment that they can grow up and enjoy their livelihood. That she just says that, you know, we want a safe and more loving environment. Without the support of these programs, how can that be accomplished? And I think that we hear that over and over again, that please give the rural and bush communities a fighting chance with public safety personnel. And then the VPSO raises, Mr. President, I'm just going to take a minute to mention that, you know, these are individuals who are the first line responders. They don't carry firearms. They oftentimes intervene in domestic violence, which we all know is one of the most serious crimes that a law enforcement officer can respond to. And we have such a high turnover rate, which is still at almost 30% for our VPSOs because of the one, and you hear it over and over again, is, you know, they get approximately $11.23 an hour. That's the same salary as a college intern would get, a driver guide, a tour guide would get. And, Mr. President, these are folks who really, as I say, have put their life on the line, and we should acknowledge that and pay them what their starting salary should be. The correction officers, where they started at, those salaries have advanced as other state employee salaries, but the VPSO salaries has not kept pace with those of equal salaries. And lastly, under this segment, we have the search and rescue, which falls under the Alaska State Troopers budget, and which is for the avalanche avalanche rescue, which search and rescue. Mr. President, I know that we did pass a resolution earlier in acknowledging the need to have a search and rescue for especially the avalanches that have been occurring, unfortunately, at a greater rate. In the last 2 years, 29 people have been killed in avalanche incidences around our state. And this appropriation would be used for signage along Turnagain Pass, Chugach State Park, Hatcher Pass, Thompson Pass, in Cordova, Cantwell, Juneau, and Seward. They would fund instruction and training for the avalanche search and rescue in Girdwood, Anchorage, Mat-Su Valley, Fairbanks, Cordova, Seward, and Anchorage. And I think that we need to continue to review this and appropriate the money necessary to address the, as I say, the continuing problems that we've had with avalanche, and I think that we can certainly cut down on the number of people that have been killed or hurt due to just not having the information available or to having the equipment that is readily available for those search and rescue efforts.
Senator Ellis.
We looked at the whole corrections component, and thankfully, the prison population growth in Alaska has slowed down over the last couple of years, but it's slowed down. It hasn't stopped. The Department of Corrections does not control that growth, and I think that if there's anything that I came away with from the subcommittee when they were testifying was that we can't close our door. We can't say, sorry, but you can't put more people in here. They have to accept those that the judicial system has put in their care. The law enforcement arrests people, the prosecutor tries them, the court rules and imposes sentences, the offender goes off to jail or to prison. It's as simple as that. If a town adds more police, they will make more arrests, thus more people will go to jail. Simple. Town doesn't ask the corrections if they can get or if they can handle more prisoners. They are concerned primarily with getting the offenders off the street, which is just the corrections takes the offenders. When a judge is considering a sentence, the judge doesn't ask corrections if they have room for this person. The judge is primarily concerned with the justice of holding an offender accountable. Corrections takes the offender sent by the court. Here in the legislature, we do at least ask the department what impact a new law might have on them. We oftentimes don't like to hear their answer or how much it will cost, but we do ask. Often, we don't fully fund a new law. So again, corrections is not in control, but must absorb the additional costs. As we all have heard many times before, much, if not most, of the crime in our state is driven by the subsistence abuse, particularly substance abuse, particularly alcohol. So it just seems logical to me that if there isn't enough substance abuse prevention going on in our state, enough money being spent on alcohol treatment in our communities, then crime would be reduced and the number of people going into our jails and prisons might decrease. Wouldn't that be something if the Department of Corrections would come to the legislature and say, our numbers are decreasing? But that's not the case. My point is, Mr. President, corrections do not control these prisoners. Corrections don't control courts. Corrections don't oftentimes control the legislature and the bills. Thus, if we want a safe and secure correctional system, and I know that we do, then we want the people of Alaska to be protected from the dangerous offenders, and I know we do that as well. Then it's absolutely imperative that we fund the department adequately. And I think that we could do just that with the amendment before you. If you look at the corrections and how they've grown over a short period of time, of a 10-year period, 57%. The rise in the prison population has been accompanied by an increase in DOC's budget. In 88, they had less than $85 million. In 99, $153 million. Yes, they are growing, but it's not due to them saying, we want more people. We want to add our budget. At the end of 1997, Alaska prisons were already being operated at 147% of design capacity. The number of individuals supervised by the state on probation or parole grew from 3,400 to 4,300. We know that if you look at the inmate profile, that these are young males who are being incarcerated. Half, unfortunately, are members of racial or ethnic minorities. The two minority groups incarcerated at disproportionate levels to their percentage in the general population are Native Americans and African Americans. Alaska Natives, sadly so, makes up 35% of the inmate population. That's in 1999, when the population of those young males are no more than 6%. 6%, 35% doesn't equate to me. African Americans made up 14% of that inmate population when they are only 4.5% of the general population. Well, Mr. President, I just suggest that we must continue to fund the corrections adequately. And when we look at our institutions, the institutions are areas that we need to provide safety and security in a state facility. We have to do that. We have to maintain public safety. We must provide the adequate prisoner population management. In calendar year 2000, within the one institution, there was one murder of one inmate by another at the 6th Avenue Correctional Facility. An officer at Ketchikan was forced to employ deadly force on an escaping felon. A suicide at Cook Inlet. A suicide at Wildwood in Kenai. A suicide at 6th Avenue in Anchorage. Cuts like these to the institutions would result in an increase in these types of events, not a decrease. What kind of message are we sending then to the department and the families of inmates when we continue to reduce that budget? And Mr. President, I know that you'll more than likely be hearing more about the Anchorage Jail. The maintenance staff will be hired at the beginning of the fiscal year and brought into the facility to begin learning and working with the contractor on all the facility support systems of this new facility. Security staff will be hired and begin training in October of 2001. In February and March, full operation of this facility will begin. Prisoners will be transferred in and from other correctional facilities holding the Anchorage prisoners. Without this increase of $230,000 of statutory designated receipts and general funds or alcohol tax, the new Anchorage jail facility will not be able to open as scheduled. This could result in significant overcrowding in the state correctional facilities, which could threaten the final resolution of Cleary and result in reimposition of court monitoring and fines. And I think that's something that none in this room want to go back to. Mr. President, under the out-of-state contracts, the failure to purchase these beds will result in, again, overcrowding at state institutions, which could, again, threaten the resolve on the Cleary lawsuit in reimposing the reimposition of court monitoring and fines. And that is something that, again, that we certainly don't want to see. One of the great ironies about contracting for beds is that the contract facilities never become overcrowded. That is, we pay X dollars for Y beds, and if the dollars decrease, then the number of beds available grow smaller. DOC would love to be funded in this way, but that's not what we do for them. We would cut the dollars for contract facilities and overcrowd our public facilities. That really doesn't make any sense to me, and I'm sure it wouldn't to the courts. Mr. President, on the probation officers that we're seeking funding for around the state, with the number of probationers and parolees increasing all the time, and that's sad to say, it is inconceivable that we should reduce the number of parole probation officers who put their very lives on the line every day to supervise this growing number of people. Now, just to make it a little bit, bring it to reality for some of us, I asked if there was an incident that I could maybe relay that to you all here on this floor that might bring it home. This is a true story. It's just one of hundreds that I'm sure could be told. But this one took place on March the 10th of this year. The Anchorage Police Department phoned a probation officer, Mr. Allen, to say that a probationer, who we'll call Joe, had just been in a verbal altercation with his girlfriend and her parents. Joe departed before the APD arrived, but when they got there, they saw cocaine, marijuana, ammunition, drug paraphernalia in plain sight. Probation Officer Allen requested that the APD get a search warrant, and when the warrant was obtained, Probation Officer Allen and the APD searched the house together. They found in that search 8 fully loaded handguns in the closet and under mattresses. There were cartons of ammunition, fully loaded banana clips for the rifles, cocaine that was later tested positive. During the search, the father of the girlfriend was present and intoxicated, and the father was difficult to deal with. The matter was reported to DFYS, and a 5-year-old child who was living there in the residence where there were guns and drugs was taken into safety. Now, without that probation officer, that's just one story, one incident, but without he and the law enforcement officer working to protect that little boy in the story, I think that it would have been certainly a different outcome, and we have weapons and drugs that are off of the street, thankfully to this probation officer. And again, my question is, why would we want to reduce the probation officers who are there on the street? When we look at the inmate health care, this has always been a big ticket in corrections, and where this status quo that we've got now is really causing some difficulties in recruiting for professional health care, that the component to enable the agency to provide a 2-range salary increase to all nurses, licensed practical nurses, and health practitioners working at the correctional institutions. Alaska is not competitive in wages paid to health practitioners or skilled and semi-skilled nursing positions. This will place the state of Alaska in the competitive arena, but not on the leading edge with this increase. Without the funding, the department will have to reduce medical staff in 24-hour institutions by up to 14 positions. Mr. President, I'm concerned that we're going to find ourselves right back in court again on that. I remember many years in a row when the Department of Corrections came to us for supplementals. This year, they didn't ask for a supplemental. So I'm assuming that we're punishing them by cutting the base 1.5%, plus only partially funding the increase needed for nurses' salaries. This state has a major problem beginning to shape up right now: recruitment, retention of qualified professionals. There's a nurse shortage nationally, and we need to be able to be competitive, and this is not the way to do it. Under the community jails, which are located in Barrow, Dillingham, Bristol Bay, Kotzebue, Petersburg, Sitka, Wrangell, Kodiak, Craig, Cordova, Haynes, Valdez, Unalaska, Seward, and Haynes, There have been no increase in funds for 7 years, and in my mind, that says to rural Alaska that the services to their communities are not as important to us as in larger communities. Mr. President, I suggest that we need desperately to get these community jails funded. Without these funds, several local jails may be in serious financial difficulty and could close their community facility. The department simply does not have the empty beds to absorb these prisoners, nor the funding to transport them to state-operated correctional facilities across the state. This saves our state money. Now, in closing, Mr. President, I asked, because I've been concerned about it for a long time, when we hear that the Cleary lawsuit is just about finalized, that we're going to get out from under it. And I asked, what happens if we continue with the budget as is? And I know that we, in my years here with the legislature, have worked hard with the administration to build an effective correctional system, one that will provide protection for the people of Alaska from dangerous offenders, and one that could get us out of the Cleary suit. Getting out of that Cleary suit would mean that the department would run corrections, not the court. And, you know, we're very close to the end of getting out of the Cleary lawsuit. Corrections has been successful, and they are no longer being fined. In fact, I think the court monitoring has all but ended, if I'm not mistaken, and we are close to the end of this chapter in our state correctional history. But if we deny the resources that I have talked about here today for continued progress in corrections, and they wind up unable to continue on the good track that they are on, we will find ourselves right back in court again. If we take action that results in overcrowding the state's institution, the court could find that unconstitutional, and we would go back to monitoring, back to fines. Is that what we want? I don't think so. Or maybe the court might find and order the department to release people early, like they have in other states, so then we get rid of our overcrowding. Is that what we want? I don't think so. Let's not go backwards. We do have to go forward. Let's do it in a positive manner. Let's stay on the good public policy ground that we have been these last several years. Let's move forward. Let's not go back. And I suggest to you here today that these amendments, if they are not adopted, we are going to slip back in public protection of our citizens. And as education, I'm sure, is number one on people's minds throughout the state, I equally am sure that the second thing that people often say is we want to ensure we have public safety, we have safe streets, we have safe communities, that our children can play out and not in fear, that we have addressed the needs of the whole state of Alaska and not one portion, one segment, but all of Alaska. And I think that's what we all want for our great grandchildren and future generations that are coming up.
Further debate on amendment number 2. Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, crime is down in Alaska. We've been fortunate. Crime's been going down for a series of years now. In fact, it's going down all over the United States. And, you know, part of that's due to a healthy economy. Part of it's probably due to some superior educational opportunities for folks out there. And part of it's certainly due to tougher anti-crime laws and a major commitment on the parts of the federal government and the state of Alaska to boost up our correctional system to accommodate additional violent criminals to make our law-abiding citizens safer. I mean, the liberals have got it all wrong, Mr. President. I mean, incarcerating dangerous criminals is effective to reducing crime. It's worked in the United States. It's been a success. So, you know, when the speaker talks about some specific types of crime that may have seen an increase in the last year in Alaska, I certainly hope the speaker's not contending that any of these specific funding levels are somehow related to that escalation of those specific types of crime. Because, of course, that would be very fuzzy logic, Mr. President. because you've got to look at from a holistic point of view of the causes of crime. And certainly spending a few dollars here or there, more or less, is not the only cause of crime in America or crime in Alaska. There's a lot of systemic issues that are involved in whether crime goes up or down in specific areas or not. And you know, a lot of that decrease in crime is due to the commitment of this legislature over the past decade to toughen our criminal justice system. And frankly, to this legislature has also made a major commitment over the past 5 years to increase funding to our correction system and deal with our correctional challenges. We continue to do that. We've increased funding for village public safety officers. We've increased funding for troopers. And we've probably done 3 or 4 decades worth of criminal justice law reform in the last decade. And I think it's had a tremendous impact on crime in Alaska. It's had a cost, and it's had a great reward in the public safety of the citizens of this state. When I see what it was like here when I first came here 15 years ago, frankly, our criminal justice system was an outrage. It was a joke. There were issues that nowhere else in America were criminals getting off on those kind of loopholes than here in Alaska. We had a jail in Fairbanks that was voted by its prisoners as the best place to be incarcerated in America. Well, we've made some reforms. I think those reforms are part of that holistic reasoning, not just dollar amounts, that go into a better society and a better level of public safety for the citizens of Alaska and for America. Now, you know, I could run through all those changes, but they're so long, it'd take pages to talk about, Mr. President. But I want to talk about one other piece of what I'm afraid is kind of fuzzy logic. And that's to somehow imply, and I think this is a great disservice, that these cuts would, that they're cuts, first of all, because this is actually an increase in the correction budget in, proposed in this budget, and there was an increase last year also. But that to not fund this additional increase would somehow increase suicides in our correctional facilities. Well, Mr. President, you know, I think when you have the tragic circumstances of a suicide in one of our correctional facilities, you have to examine the precise circumstances and facts regarding each one of those before you should be able to draw any sweeping conclusions that simply throwing more dollars into a facility would have had any impact on that. And I would suggest that some of the specific facts regarding some of those tragic circumstances that have occurred have not had anything to do with staffing levels, because some of those folks were very intensely monitored prior